Today's episode of the City of Smack podcast on the City of Smack podcast network is presented by Tracksmith. If you're new to the show, welcome. But by now, you'd know that Tracksmith is a big supporter of City of Smack. They've sponsored races and some of the broadcasts we've done, backed the podcast during our daily show at the Olympic Trials, and outfitted me and some friends when I raced Malcolm Gladwell in a mile back in May. Unfortunately, we don't talk about how that race ended for me. The Boston-based running brand is a company that crafts performance apparel for training, racing, and rest days. They just got mentioned on the 2021 Brands That Matter list by Fast Company, so congrats to them. From the mountains to cross-country courses and the roads, Tracksmith's newest releases celebrate fall running in all its varieties. Shop the latest collection of running essentials and check out the Tracksmith Journal for some inspiration and stories from the athletes, traditions, and events that make running the greatest sport in the world. If you saw me at the New York City Marathon, I was rocking their classic Van Cortlandt singlet with a little City of Smack touch to it. If you're in the city, their pop-up at 1928 Broadway is open for the rest of November on weekends. And for my loyal listeners out there, Tracksmith is offering 15% off your purchases using code CITIUS15 at checkout. Shop their fall collection as well, which is live as we speak. New colors, new styles for a new season. Thanks to the support on Patreon, we picked up a few more people after our last episode, so welcome to Marley Brackett, Monica Bauman, and AJ Melninkis for supporting our storytelling efforts here. So if you enjoy what we're doing, support us over at patreon.com/sidiousmag. I can break it down for you this way. Donating $4 a month on Patreon is like buying me a cup of coffee in exchange for all of these shows. $8 a month is like getting me a salad for lunch. Someone actually just asked me, where am I getting a salad for $8? Hey, I'm being generous here. Anything above that per month and you're basically my best friend. You sign up, you get a mention on the next episode. You can also make a one-time donation by sending any dollar amount to @sidiousmag on Venmo. Thanks to Jamie Lee Jocelyn, Lisa Hayes, Charles Dart, Cindy Gonzalez, Alejandro Schweidhelm, Michelle Chewins, Krista Borme, Annie Becker, Anush Arkeli, and Mari Varhu, Ivan Torres, and Andrea Clapsy for the donations. Basically, Venmo's like a tip jar. If you enjoyed the conversation, the episode, shoot us a couple bucks. It doesn't hurt. Thanks to everyone. Thanks for those people for coming through with some contributions. Another way you can show your love is by picking up a t-shirt or sweater over at sidiousmag.com and hitting the merch tab. If you listened to the last episode, we just dropped a shirt with Molly Seidel with the quote, "Well-behaved marathoners seldom make history," with all proceeds going towards We Coach, which is a charity that supports female coaches in all sports. Keep the 5-star reviews coming on Apple Podcasts. We cracked the top 40 of all sports shows on there. Your reviews help us populate onto people's feeds as a recommended show and allows possible sponsors to see what listeners think of the show. It takes less than a minute to do, so leave a review and rating, and I greatly appreciate it if you can do so. My guest for today's episode is Mario Diurno. Just a few days ago, you got to hear the story of Molly Seidel, who finished fourth in the elite women's race. I want to share with you the story of a friend of mine and one of the last people across the finish line. So while many of the participants who ran on Sunday were getting ready for bed, Mario was working his way through Central Park and crossed the finish line just before 11 p.m. That's 10 hours and 55 minutes after he started in Staten Island. Mario is a client support specialist at Release Recovery. You've heard me speak about Release in previous episodes. I've interviewed the founder and my friend Zach Clark after he was on The Bachelorette and before we did the Goggins Challenge in April to raise money for the Release Recovery Foundation. Mario works to get people treatment for addiction and substance abuse, and sometimes that means that he travels out to meet people and get them the help that they need in person. He's one who speaks very openly about his recovery story and message in order to inspire hope for others. He's a bigger fellow with not much of a running background or consistent training, so when he said he was doing the marathon, many of us had our doubts that he'd be able to do it. We did these Monday night community runs in Central Park, and Mario would be there every week pushing himself just to make it through 2 miles, to make it through 4 miles, 6 miles, no matter how long it took. The journey to the starting line was enough of a win. When I FaceTimed him at 4 p.m. on Sunday from a restaurant at the Release Recovery after party, he was only halfway through the race, but he was still all smiles, and he made a new friend along the way named Freddie that helped him get to the finish line. You'll hear more about her as well in this episode. He just kept going, and it truly shifted my perspective on the power of what setting your mind on a goal can accomplish. So I hope you enjoy this bonus episode this week. Here is Mario, the Italian horn, Diurno. All right, now we welcome on Mario Diurno to the City of Smack podcast. Your first ever running podcast, right?
Yes, I've only done like virtual ones, and it only It only fits being that, you know, it's a running podcast.
The Italian Horn is how you go by on Instagram. It's how I first knew of you, just seeing you in the comment section of our friend Zach Clark. His Instagram, the Release Recovery Founder. He's been on this podcast before, so some people might know of him by now. But how did you get the nickname the Italian Horn in the first place?
You know, everyone asked me that. Basically, I was working, I was traveling with a musician, and I was his road manager. And we were at a gig one time, and there was a big horn section. And he was kind of hitting on this girl, being nice, you know, whatever. And I kind of just, in Mario fashion, came out of nowhere and started, you know, going off a little bit, joking around, trying to help. And I asked her, I said, did you ever play the Italian horn? And she was a French horn player, and I think I scared the crap out of her. So it kind of just stuck, you know. Obviously, I mean, I'm 100% Italian, and, you know, kind of just started from that, and I changed my Instagram handle like a week later.
Wow. I never knew that story. One would guess, I guess, from seeing some videos of you, born and raised in New York City, but that's not the case. Where are you originally from?
So I was born and raised in Norwalk, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. It's about an hour away from here.
But you're very New York by now.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So, yeah, I used to, I don't know what it was, but whenever I was traveling, people would think I was from New York, so I would just go with it. You know, mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're from the Bronx? Yeah, I'm from the Bronx.
Yeah, no, yeah, you would have got me if you, the first time you ever told me that, I would have believed you.
I love you, Chris Chavez.
I'm so excited to have this conversation for people to get to know you, because you're sitting across from me right now, you're wearing a Release Recovery t-shirt, you're wearing the medal, the marathon was 4 days ago, but you're still not off this high. And it's ironic that we're calling it like the high of a marathon, because you've been in recovery now for how many years?
So this past October 10th, I celebrated 7 years of continuous recovery.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So yeah, on this podcast, we interview some of the top professional runners out there. We interview some people who are doing some cool things in running. And what I've wanted to share is your story, but in particular, we were almost going to do it before the marathon. I'm glad we waited, because this past Sunday, you were one of the last people to cross the finish line. You started the New York City Marathon at 12 o'clock p.m., and you didn't cross that finish line until 10:55 p.m. later that night. There was one other woman who finished right behind you, who was with you the entire time. We'll share her story in a bit, but first off, congratulations, because that was just, it's one of the coolest things I've ever gotten to see. You know, year in and year out, I watch some of these videos of the people coming across the finish line last, you know, at nighttime, and it's moving, but it's especially moving knowing that you know the person who it was, and FaceTiming you while I'm at the after party and you are at mile 13 and it's four or 5 hours in already. You're just halfway there, and it was crazy, because that was the moment I think it really hit me. You were going to do this thing. Once you were in Manhattan and then making your way into the Bronx, there was just really no turning back. So I you inspired me, and I hope you can inspire so many more people by sharing your story. But I need to know more about that day and how special it was. So let's get right into it. The morning of. Actually, let's go even before that. Let's go back to Friday. I remember we had dinner together with a bunch of other friends, and you had a cane. What was up at that point?
I'm getting emotional, honestly. Just you talking about all this just got me emotional. And thank you. Yeah, so I hurt my knee. I hurt my right knee at the very last Release Recovery Foundation Monday night run in the park. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was nervous. I was very scared Monday. I could barely bend it. And by Thursday, I was like, I have to get this checked out. And I went and got it checked out. And I still have to follow up. But, you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to do this, Chris. Mm-hmm. Come Friday, I was still on the fence. It wasn't really until Saturday when a friend of mine, Alex Densman, from Ashley Recovery Center. Mm-hmm. Close friend of mine texted me and said, come to this place. You're going to do cryotherapy. And I don't know what it was, but between that and then going to pick up my bib, I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
That's when I knew. I was like, okay. You know, I got my knee taped up at the expo. The expo was, I've never seen anything like that. Mm-hmm. And Saturday around 5 o'clock, I knew I was all in.
Wow. For, to put it into context for some people who don't know you, and, you know, maybe for, this is audio, so they don't get to see you, but, you know, let's share with them exactly, your shorter guy, bigger guy, the odds were against you right from the start.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not in, you know, high school shape anymore, we'll say. And I've had some struggles with food, you know, and I've been trying to work on that. So the marathon was a great idea to try. You know, even before this, I was trying to work out and trying to get back into it. And I was really struggling. And I had a lot of support through my coworkers and great leaders. And, you know, the honestly, what really changed was the Monday night runs. Mm-hmm. Even just, you know, it changed my whole week. Even if it was just that once a week, you know, it would get me out there, get me excited, met new people, got to see familiar faces, got to see you. It was like a big party, you know, and I never was a runner, but it was that sense of community. So that really changed. And I started training. I wasn't listening to the training exactly like, you know, Welshie.
Our buddy Ryan Welsh. Yeah.
You know, you and Ryan Welsh laid out a sick plan. But I, you know, I'm not the best with that stuff. So I started and then I stopped and then I started again, but no matter what, on Mondays I would show up and I would look forward to it. Mm-hmm. And that energy carried me through the week.
Yeah. Throughout this whole entire process, I guess, like what got you to sign up in the first place? I know Zach, our friend, has his sales pitch down to a T. He can convince any friend of his to sign up and run a marathon. He convinced me to do the Goggins Challenge back in April. But it also felt like there must have been a meeting where everyone was together at release, and he told everyone, I'm running the marathon. We have 50 plus bibs. Who's in? And it's like you'd be missing out if you said no.
Very true. So Zach Clark, one of the co-founders of Release Recovery and Release Recovery Foundation, is number one, is one of my best friends. Mm-hmm. He's a brother. Number two, he's a hell of a salesman. He has been talking about this marathon specifically to me probably since I met him.
Really?
About three, four years ago. And I had no idea. I was like, yeah, all right. This guy's nuts. Like, what's he talking about? And 3 years later, whatever, and some change, we actually did it.
Yeah.
He never stopped believing in me, no matter what. Mm-hmm. Always put time in, tips, training. He gave me everything. But I also had to meet him halfway, you know? But he literally never gave up. Could support. I've never seen someone support somebody that much.
Yeah. When you initially did sign up and, you know, the release had gotten the bibs, I remember there was a text thread that we all had where it was like, is it possible and is it healthy for Mario to do this? And, you know, you'd never done another race like this before. You'd never done a half marathon. You'd never done a 10K or even like a... There's the Release 5K, but I'm sure you walked that one too. Or you probably just volunteered at that one, right?
Chris, I've never done any Ks. To be frank with you, the only Ks I have done were ones that were drugs. Yeah, so I was that kid in high school or middle school where they would make us do the mile and the sit and reach and all that stuff. And I was good at like two of the things. Running was not my thing. Mm-hmm. So I would walk and smoke cigarettes and I would run a little bit, but, you know, I was a lacrosse player and I was actually really good at that, mm-hmm. but short distances.
Yeah.
I was never a long runner, you know, in my life. So that's why I was like, this is a pipe dream.
Yeah. This journey to the starting line on Sunday, like a lot of the reason why is rooted in your own journey with recovery. So I've gotten the chance to hear it multiple times from you and in some of the posts that you've made. But I think it'd be super valuable for you to share it with the listeners and kind of take us through, I guess, when things started to get hard and, you know, there's a point where you were near death and the process of coming back from that, because I think it'd be super valuable because that is enrooted in your reason why you wanted to do this.
100%. I truly believe in my heart and everything that if it wasn't for my recovery journey, I wouldn't have been able to do any of this. Cause I kept thinking of that during the marathon. I kept thinking of all the trials and the hard times and the tribulations and all the stuff that I got through. And it's like, well, if I could do that, why can't I do this? Mm-hmm. You know, and what about that one time? Or what about, you know, this time we did in recovery where release, we do a camping trip. And I did some gnarly stuff with the help of Zach and a whole team of people where I thought I was going to die sober. Hmm. And it's like, those are the times that pop up in my head when I was hurting. But, you know, my recovery story, you know, in a nutshell is I had a great family. You know, I'm the only one that I know of pretty much that has this illness. There's definitely some mental illness, you know, in my family, but we are, they were very old school right from Italy. And we didn't talk, you know, much about like feelings and therapy and rehab. Like, I didn't even know what that was. You know, I thought that was for rock stars. And so, you know, what happened was I started dabbling with substances and alcohol probably, you know, around middle school. And from there, the progression took off. It was pretty fast. Today's standards, I probably could have been in rehab in, you know, junior year of high school.
Wow.
And I traded it. You know, it basically took over my whole life. You know, I stopped dressing up nice. I stopped caring about my appearance. Stopped caring about women as much and girls and sports and school. Everything went out the window. And my priority became to get high and drunk all the time. It almost felt like I had to after a while. And fast forward, I got kicked out of school. And really, you know, some of the things that stick out were I really wanted to do was go to college. Believe it or not, like Syracuse was like my ultimate dream. Mm-hmm. And play lacrosse, you know, and just have a college. But I inside knew that would never happen, you know, and I kind of gave up. You know, when you're struggling with this stuff, you don't have you give up any dreams or goals you have, and you kind of just settle. You kind of say, all right, this is my life now, I accept it, and that's it, you know? So fast forward after high school, this is like the late 90s, OxyContin was huge, flooded everywhere, and I was introduced to that. And the progression of my disease, you know, went from like cocaine to OxyContin. And from there, that changed my whole life. And I was actually never prescribed it or anything like that. I just was handed it by a friend. Had no idea how powerful it was. And that became my whole life. And then that turned into heroin. And you know, I never wanted to do heroin or cocaine or anything. You know, I made that pact with your friends when you're younger saying, we'll never do this. I remember it clear as day. We'll never do coke, heroin, this, drugs, anything. But, you know, it's not that simple. You know, I'm wired a little differently than you, you know? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't become a choice. That's why the whole, like, just say no thing didn't work. I would have loved to say no, you know, but it's just, I have an illness, just like if I had cancer or diabetes or, you know, I don't know, whatever, like it's something I can't just control. So, but I can put it into remission, you know, and so that's how I treat it is doing certain things I have to do all the, you know, every day. And then, so that led me into an overdose in 2004 where I was pronounced dead and put on life support for 2 weeks. And, you know, my family, this is what I heard. They called my family in the middle of the night and said to come by to the hospital, come now, you got to say goodbye. And if I did survive, they were saying I was going to be a vegetable. And I don't remember any of it, to be honest with you. And at that moment, it was actually the first time in a long time that I felt peace. Because the daily struggles of being, you know, under the influence all the time and just a slave to this stuff is, it's not fun. It's a nightmare. So, I used to wake up and wish I wasn't alive. And I didn't know there was a way out. And so this actually helped me. This, you know, initially I woke up and was confused and scared and tried to rip everything out, you know, intubation, all that stuff, and tubes. And by day three, you know, how insidious this thing is I was ready to go back out doing my thing. Hmm. You know, and that's like the insane mental part of this disease. But I couldn't, the look I saw on my family, I had never seen before. So I believe by divine intervention, I picked up the phone and called my brother. And that's why today I believe that there's something out there. And I called him and I told him myself. And I had never done that. And I called my brother Lorenzo and I said, you know, I don't know why I'm doing this, but there's drugs at the house. And I just know that I can't, you know, I need help. I don't know if I want to be sober, but I know I got to do something. And a friend of mine growing up, he was like the only one that I knew, like his sister was like on heroin and it wasn't big at the time. And they helped me get in touch with somebody to go to a rehab, you know, and that's the problem. You know, the issue is there's no roadmap for this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not many people there to hold your hand. You know, so that's what Release Recovery, that's what we thrive on. Like we're all about walking families, parents, kids, whoever, the person that's inflicted, walking them through this journey and getting them the quality help they need. So, yeah, that was my, I'd like to say that was my last time in rehab. But over the last, you know, almost 20 years, you know, like Zach Clark always says, my journey wasn't linear, mm-hmm. but I've been sober longer than I haven't. And to me, that's, I'm a success.
Yeah.
You know, so it's been a journey. I've met lifelong friends, and I've never met a greater community as I have in these, you know, meetings, like in fellowships and mutual aid, they call it, I guess, 12-step meetings. Mm-hmm. Until I met the running community at the Goggins Challenge. That was one of the coolest nights of my life, too. You know, sitting there with you and Ryan Welsh up till 3, 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Joe Zappone.
I thought I sacrificed sleep, but it felt important to hear this story because, you know, it was for us being, you know, whatever, however many miles we were into this challenge, like our legs hurt, you know, we were complaining, we were sleep deprived. But I think it goes back to like what we're feeling in that moment and that pain doesn't compare to like what you've been through and experienced. And for us, like it was the awareness of like why we were doing this. We were looking to raise money for the Release Recovery Foundation. And so if we can get through, you know, these 24 hours, 48 hours of just being sore constantly, that we could try and help someone who needs that assistance and that access to care that you eventually got. And so it was special to hear it, you know, that night. And so how did you end up getting connected with Release?
Oh, excuse me. That's another wild story, man. And there's no coincidence in my life. You know, I was just talking to the woman the other night. There's a woman named Anita Devlin. And 4 years ago, she kept, you have to go work. You have to go see Zach. You have to go see Zach Clark and Justin. And I'm like, who are you talking about? Like, who's Zach? What's Release? Like, I had no idea.
What were you doing before that?
So I was working in the field, but mostly nonprofit, advocacy, media. It was always, you know, mixing recovery with like music or entertainment and media.
Okay.
And I was traveling and we were just kind of showing this thing works and we're giving hope and it was awesome. But, you know, I didn't really know what Release was. So she sets up an interview, basically. I call Zach. He says, come by, and I blow him off. I totally didn't go in. Fast forward, you know, next couple of years, we start kind of becoming friends on Instagram and kind of fans of each other, I would say. I was a fan of his, and we connected about Pearl Jam. Mm. And then, you know, we would see each other at certain events, and I didn't really know what was going on, though, you know, but I knew I liked these dudes. And so what really solidified it was we all met up at a Pearl Jam concert at Fenway Park 2018, and that was it.
Wow.
You know, for me anyway. And I met Justin and Zach. We all broed out, and it was amazing, you know. And next thing I know, I'm in the office one day coming by to have an interview with Joe Zappone, and I wouldn't leave. They had to, like, kick me out because the magic. I don't know what was going on, but that was it. I've never left since.
That's amazing. And so now what is sort of your day-to-day? Because it's so interesting from what I've kind of heard. It's, like, very hands-on. Like, you're the guy that they send. I think of, like, what is it? Maybe Dog the Bounty Hunter, who has to go out and catch something. But, like, you go out there and actually get people to help, right? Or, like, exactly how – what's your role, and could you explain it, I guess?
Yeah, so – I do a couple different things, but the reason I was hired and what I love to do the most is to help people one-on-one. Mm. And I'm the guy that, you know, they call, I guess, a transport specialist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you need to go to treatment and you're in Mississippi, I'll fly down, pick you up. Possibly we have to do an intervention or whatever the case is. But my goal and my job is to get you from A to B mm-hmm. safely.
Yeah.
And to let you kind of to do it in a way where you're not stressed out. You know, I might make some jokes, keep it light, but also give some hope. And the reason I love doing that, and I say it all the time to my friends, is that I will never forget that ride to treatment. It's one of the most important things that's happened to me a couple times. And unless you've kind of been there, it's hard to understand. But basically, it's bittersweet. You're emotional. You're sad. You're scared. You might be a little excited if you're lucky and you're hopeful. But it's a very memorable ride. And what I try to do is make that the best possible experience for these people, so that, you know, you'll never forget your last day of using and your first day of treatment. You know, and so I love doing that, man. You know, I've flown all over the country, stayed with people for weeks. And all I do, you know, is just give my experience, give them some hope, and really just try to stay positive for them and believe, you know, tell them, like, I believe in them.
Yeah. That's a testament to just your personable skills. Like, you can go out there and just, you know, chat it up with whoever. Like, it must be fascinating to be just dropped in the middle of, you know, anywhere, say Chicago or Boston or anywhere. It could be middle of nowhere, a place you've never heard of before. Mm-hmm. And you have to walk into a bar to find someone and then convince them that, you know, help is on the way and that you have to share your own story. And, like, it's so fascinating to me.
It's I think, you know, I don't think everyone can do it. Mm-hmm. I think there's, number one, I think my type, like my personality or my it's really, again, because of my experiences of the stuff I've been through.
It's got to be hard, too, sometimes, right?
Oh, my God, yeah. They don't always want to, you know, yeah. They're not always excited to see you, Chris.
Yeah.
and that's okay, too. You know, what we do at Release is just love you. We really, you know, it's all about love. And sometimes that it might look differently, but at the end of the day, it's about getting that person the help that they need, you know? And man, I mean, there's crazy stories. I don't know. I can't really talk about too much.
Right, right, right.
But, you know, if that's something I can do, I will continue to do that for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know, it's different every time. It's exciting. You're nervous. You don't know how it's going to go. You know, you might get in and they might just shut the door in your face, mm-hmm. you know, but we never give up on people.
there's also that part of it too, where like in conversations I've had with our friend Andrew Schwartz, who's also been sober now 5 years, actually just celebrated it yesterday, that, I mean, there was that moment where you were pronounced dead, basically, and made it out, like somehow came back to life and have been able to thrive afterwards. Obviously, you know, it hasn't been smooth. It's had its bumps along the way. But do you think about just that loss that sometimes people don't get that second chance sometimes? And from what Andrew Schwartz has told me, is like the statistics are obviously crazy. What was it? How many people lost to overdoses last year? It was
93,000.
That's crazy. And the number, when I think we were being trained for Narcan treatment, I turned to you when the woman, you know, said that number, and I said to you, I was like, so are we expecting that number to go up or down this year? And you said it's going to go up. And that's it really is. It's a harrowing, scary thing to realize, but it's also painful because along the way, I'm guessing you also lost friends and people you've gotten to know through the recovery community, and that's got to, you know, add an extra sting to things.
Oh my God, I've lost a lot of friends, Chris. You know, I was actually talking about this last night to somebody, and a younger guy that has is a little newer in recovery, and you know, he has recently been experienced some of his friends that have gone back out and relapsed now. And he's, you know, it's scary. And so all I could really tell him was that, you know, it does happen. It definitely, you know, I don't like when people say it's part of it. You know, like relapse is part of recovery. It's not part of recovery. Mm-hmm. There's millions of people I know, not millions, but there's a lot of people I know, hundreds, probably thousands, that have never relapsed. So if you're out there, one of my big messages is you do not ever have to relapse. Mm-hmm. You know, it does happen. So, you know, there's a lot of people I knew growing up and even recently where they didn't have that same chance, like you said, you know, and overdosed and that was it. They're not with us anymore. And, you know, it's the sad reality of this thing. And I can't tell you why some people make it and some don't. You know, I used to get hung up on that. And I realized through talking to people and through talking to God, is all I know is I'm here and what am I going to do with that? Mm-hmm. And I need to make that more special. You know, I have to really take advantage of the fact that I'm here, even though some of my best friends are not anymore. So a lot of times that gets me through. As well as, you know, when I was doing the marathon, that was something I was thinking about.
Right.
You got to do it for them.
Let's get into the marathon. Once you knew the knee was maybe going to hold up, you have, you know, Saturday to kind of hang out and like wait for the big moment. You pick up your bib. Sunday morning comes around. You have to get on the ferry. What's going through your mind at that point?
I was going, well, honestly, this is a long ass ride to get just to get out there. Cause yeah. I get hyped up, you know, I'm a very high energy usually. And I was excited. You know, I apologize. I really wanted to come eat with you guys Saturday, but I just knew I needed some rest, mm-hmm. you know, and it was a lot long couple days. And, I went to bed early. I had my bib out, you know, I was excited, like school, you know, like first day of school. And, I get on the one train and then I go down all the way down to that and the ferry. And I said, holy moly, what's next? And what was really cool is I met two girls from the Monday Night Run, mm-hmm. and we all rode it together.
Oh, wow.
So that was cool.
And when you are pinning like the bib onto your singlet and everything, did you have your doubts about like how this was going to go?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Chris, I was so scared. The moment I actually signed the dotted line and put my credit card, which is also another scary fact, you have to raise money.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I've raised money before, but like no one's ever said, hey, if you don't raise this money, we're going to hit your bank account.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like this is like, oh, I'm invested.
You hit your fundraising minimum and everything, yeah.
Yeah, I've actually gotten more since after.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I'm blessed and I'm thankful. And yeah, it was a scary 6 months or whatever, how long it's been. You know, it's not like I doubted myself, like, there's no way I can do this. But I'm also the kind of person, if you know me, I stay in the today.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's a gift and a curse. So I don't really stress until it's like right before. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, of course, I was scared. I was like, but I also just was kind of on a high saying, you know what? I'm just going to go out there, start the race, get going and see what happens. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm showing up. I'm going to show up. And that's it. The rest I have no control over.
In the starting corral, they put you guys in there. It's 12 o'clock. At this point, you know, the professionals had crossed the finish line. They're at their hotels. They're showered up and everything. You know who – you can probably look up who won the race. You could have watched the entire race. this is when it gets real. Are you all the way towards the back? Did you put yourself towards the front and let all the people pass you? But then, like, very quickly – you were one of the last people, right?
Yes. So
the cannon goes off. New York, New York starts playing.
Oh, so cool. Everything you said is exactly how it happened. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's what Chris was talking about. And it was really cool. I was in the back. I was in the back, yeah. Like the back. There was teams around me. They were doing push-ups. I mean, it was wild. The energy was electric. They shoot the cannon off. The girl sings
God Bless America?
Yeah, the national anthem. Oh, the national anthem. I'm like excited. You know, I'm feeling like, wow, I haven't been in sports in a while. Like,
yeah.
They go off. You know, I'm with some people for a little while. I wasn't really talking to nobody or anything. Like, not to be rude. I was just trying to get in a zone. Mm-hmm. But immediately, I also realized my tracker didn't work. And so whatever, you know, I was like, I'm just going to share my location. And then Strava wasn't working for me. So I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter. I'm here. And I turn around at one point early on and I see Freddie and she's behind me. And I'm just like, cool, man. All right. You know, I'm not alone. There's some other women. And
this is just a stranger at this point, right? You didn't know who she was or anything.
I didn't know her from Adam, you know, and I didn't know anyone, you know, and you know, like you said, all my friends, all you guys, and I saw everyone at the corral earlier at the field or whatever. Mm-hmm. But other than that, yeah, it was just me, you know. But I had all you guys with me,
yeah,
you know, in spirit and the energy and all the pep talks and just the countless, like, you're we got you, bro, you know. And so once I mean, the other thing too is like Brooklyn was amazing, but you got to understand, they were closing the race down behind me, just like you told me.
Yeah.
You told me this a long time ago, Chris.
I told you the sweeper trucks were going to be coming for you.
Yep.
But no matter what, let them pass you. You're going to just have to follow the course on your own, which, like, ahead of time, you didn't really study.
I had no idea. I mean, I looked at it, but I was like, all right, there's a line here. We're going over this line, bridge. And so that's exactly what happened. In the beginning, I got a little mad because they were like, come on, you want to ride? You want to get out? I was like, no. I'm not quitting. Like, mm-hmm. What do you mean? And they started pulling all the stations out, you know, and that, to be honest with you, is when I looked over and I says, yo, I better make an ally, Chris Chavez. you know, it's like Survivor. I said, yeah. I might want to make a friend out here.
Yeah.
And I walked up to Freddie and introduced myself. And she's like the sweetest person I've ever met.
So she was behind you or ahead of you?
At that point, I think I jumped off to use a bathroom. And maybe came back out and she was just kind of there. Mm-hmm. You know, like I just saw it and I said, hey, my name's Mario. Like, what's up? You know, can we walk together? And we really, if I can't tell you how, you know, I can't stress enough how we really leaned on each other. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like at one point I told her, I said, this is like the Amazing Race. Because she was, now she's done this, I think, 6 times. Mm-hmm. So she knew the course. Like the back of her hand.
Yeah.
But there was times when I had to pull it up on my phone and we did it together.
Yeah.
You know, and that was just the beauty of working together as a team. Mm-hmm. You know, and honestly, I don't know if I could have got through without her. You know, she was definitely stressing to me. Like she wanted to quit a few times. Mm-hmm. And I just kept doing it. It was almost like when I'm on a job with you know, out there working with a client. When it's not going, you know, that great, I'm telling them, like, hey, man, it's going to be okay, you know? We got this. Like, look how beautiful it is. We're out here. You know, just try to stay positive, even when I don't even really believe it. You know, but you got to be there for someone else.
Yeah. You are walking, like, you know, I looked on the map. I asked you to share your location because the tracker wasn't working. I guess they pulled the timing mats at some point, and so, you know, we just didn't know how far you were going to hit splits and all this kind of stuff. At first, it was like, you're going to be done at 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I knew that wasn't going to happen because that was projecting that you were going to stay at the same steady pace the entire way, and it was only going to get harder as it went along. Before all of this, the longest run walk that you put together was 15 miles, I think it was, yes. And it took you 6 hours, I think?
No.
Or 5 hours, something like that.
I don't remember, actually.
But we get to this point in the middle of the race where now you're 16, coincidentally, is like approaching the Queensboro Bridge.
Oh, God.
You're heading into unknown territory as to like how far you've ever taken your body on, you know, 2 feet in one go. What's going through your head when you hit 16 and you're starting to think, this is the farthest run I've ever put together?
Yeah. Yeah, Chris. you know, it got hairy. So the fact that they opened the roads and the street, the sweepers, and it started getting dark and it was cold and all these factors, right? What kept me going, again, was you guys. And also, this is going to sound, this is a little secret I told a couple people, but, you know, when I was in active addiction, you do some gnarly things. Mm-hmm. You know, some I'm proud of, some I'm not. I don't regret anything. You know, it's all for a reason. And it helped me, believe it or not. There was some, I don't know how to put it, but there was some nights where I was out there and you know, so I knew in my head physically, you know, I'm a lot heavier now too, but, and you know, I knew I could, like, I was tough and I could put my body through certain things. But, you know, doing it sober, and I was feeling it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was feeling pain. And the fact is that I couldn't run. I tried and I couldn't. I was too nervous. I wanted to finish.
Yeah.
So that definitely slowed me up. But that bridge you were talking about, man.
You had to go on the did they open up to traffic at that point?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so you had to go on the actual, like, walk.
Oh, we were in this little pathway, and I was worried about Freddie. I was protecting her because there's guys on electric bikes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's narrow. And then we actually hooked up out of nowhere. Some dude comes that said he's not officially in the race.
Yeah.
But he has a jacket on, and he was a little out there. and he started walking with us. I'm going to be honest with you, Chris. I had to lose him. Because it was dangerous, the three of us.
Yeah.
So we kind of lost him. We let him go. And me and Freddie stayed tight. And that was scary.
Yeah.
You know, and it is really cold over those bridges. Mm-hmm. So I was just running on pure adrenaline. My legs weren't as bad as I thought, but I couldn't, you know, run. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't walk terribly fast. But I knew I had to stay moving. You know, the blood was pumping.
Mm-hmm. It's totally different than when, you know, anyone else who ran that race will tell you, you come off the bridge and there's a million people cheering for you on First Avenue. By the time you get there, it's, you know, it's like a normal day. People are just already at home. They're at the after parties. They're, you know, they'd spectated the marathon. So I guess, can you paint the picture for me? I guess, like, what was First Avenue like for you now having to go all the way up?
It was dead. It was a dead zone. No, it was, you know, my personality is I talk to everybody and I wave, and mm-hmm. that's a normal day for me. So I think I just kept doing that, you know, and waving and saying thank you and hey. And certain people would shout out, hey, yeah, keep going. But honestly, a lot of people are just walking by you trying to get past you.
Yeah.
Like a normal New York Sunday. So it was hard. You know, the restaurants were open. People were outside. Just kind of...
Some people cheering, right? Or not really?
Couple. You know, like, as you pass them. But no, there was no more, like, crowds.
Yeah.
The cops, I will say, it was the best day I've ever had with cops. Cops were so nice and supportive. And I have nothing against them. I'm just joking. But, yeah. You know, and a lot of people, to be honest with you, thought we had finished. Right. And they were just kind of giving us props, like, hey, good job today. And we were like, no, we're still going.
Wow.
You know, so it was cool, man. We met some people with some dogs. We got some love. And, you know, the Bronx was like a dead zone. Mm-hmm. You know, and we almost stopped at the McDonald's.
There is one.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about it. I said, we can't do that tonight, Freddie. I haven't had McDonald's in months, actually, because of this.
Yeah. You're obviously sharing a little bit of your story with Freddie. Freddie's sharing some of her story with you. What were some of the things that really stuck out to you that about, you know, I'm sure some of it is personal, but of the resilience you got to feel about her and her story? Like, what did you really learn about this total stranger that you had only met a couple, seen from on the bridge and then gotten to become best friends with by the time you hit the Queensboro?
That's exactly what happened. I felt very close to her because we were in this together, and she is so nice. And we just started talking, opening up to each other right away. And I told her, I says, you're a good listener. You know, I said, you're really easy to talk to. I said, you should work in this field. And, you know, without putting too much out there, you know, it's her stuff, her business, but protecting her privacy and stuff. But we shared some things, mm-hmm. you know, and I was very open about, she asked me why I was running and what's release. And I told her some of my journey, and she was very supportive and cool about it. And she told me, you know, about her childhood and her sisters and her parents. And, you know, she's a great person. She takes care of her family. She works as a civil engineer. She's done this thing, I think, 5-6 times, you know. And let me tell you something, Chris. One thing I noticed early on, if you would have saw the shoes she was wearing, it's almost like nothing.
Yeah, I saw them in like a photo that they were like really thin. They looked like just like walking shoes, right?
Like those Vibrams or
something. Yeah,
like
that's these what it looked
like. And I didn't say nothing. I want to, you know, keep it positive. But I was like, I'm over here in these fat New Balances, you know, and I'm like, how is she doing this? And she had shared with me, you know, she struggled, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, where she couldn't finish. And what she did was she came back, I think, the next day or so and did the rest of the race. And that really...
Because it got... I think it was because it got dark in the Bronx, right? Mm-hmm. And she didn't feel safe and she was all alone. And so then just came back and finished it the next day, right?
Or something like that? Yeah, that's what I remember.
And, okay.
You know, that was part of the thing she was stressing. I mean, when we started going into... It was getting darker. It was getting late. We're going into parts, you know, unknown. And I told her, I says, well, I'm totally comfortable here. You know, don't worry, I got you. You know, and I was walking in front of her or next to her, and we didn't have any issues. But I think just knowing that she wasn't alone, mm-hmm. I think might have helped her.
And it helped you?
Oh, my God, are you kidding me? I don't know where I was going. And I'm not good with directions. So, yeah, I mean, she's just a sweetheart. She's... She lives in North Jersey. I talked to her the next day. You know, she gave me a nice shout out. She was in the New York Post. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been telling everyone. It's just a really cool story that you really, I don't know, I could have never imagined this.
Yeah. It was funny because when they came out with the official results of everyone who had crossed the finish line after they removed the timing mats, turns out you weren't the final, like the slowest finisher. There was an older woman who finished it, who did it in 12 hours. She just happened to start much ahead, like further ahead of you. So cross the finish line, you know, 12 hours later, you ended up being faster than like four other people total. But the funniest thing is that you and Freddie crossed the finish line. And because Freddie, I think, may have started ahead of you a little bit, her time is faster than yours by just like a couple seconds. And so I when we sent it in a group chat, okay. I think someone was like, what, you let Freddie out kick you at the end?
Yeah,
like
yeah. She tripped me with the walker. Nah, I mean, you know, her sisters, she didn't have that the whole time.
Right, yeah.
Her sisters, shout out to them too, God bless. They were so nice. They welcomed me and they met us a few times. And she had told me, like, at mile, I think it was after that bridge.
Yeah.
After 15 or somewhere. They brought her walker. Had a headlight. She had supplies. I mean, she was ready.
Yeah.
I didn't have that. I had a couple goos and two pairs of headphones, some Beats. And, you know, I lost my train of thought.
No, it was about her finishing ahead of you a little bit.
Oh, right. So, you know, I crossed a line. My whole family is there, aka the release team. Mm-hmm. It's amazing that we got flags. There's Pearl Jam playing. There's food. One dude's got a pizza. Like, I was in awe. And the moment I crossed it and actually just celebrated, like screamed, you could see it in a video. I actually turn around and say, "Freddie, where's Freddie? Where's Freddie?" And I felt like Rocky in that moment, like Adrian kind of thing, mm-hmm. because I just cared so much about this person and that we did it. You know, that we finished.
Yeah. When did you know you were going to finish this thing no matter how long it was going to take? Because I was surprised, you know, you make it into Manhattan. I think what I previously had told you, I was like, Horn, like, it's inspiring enough for you to just get to Manhattan. You're 16 miles in. Like, it's the longest you've ever gone. You could peel off there, and it's fine. You don't have to go the full distance in your first go around. But once I looked at the map and saw you were in the Bronx, I was like, he's actually doing this thing.
Yeah, so you were right. Yeah, Chavo. You, Zach, everyone, you guys were right. I'm going to give that on record. You guys were right. It got gnarly. And so I did want to quit. I tried to just not think about the pain and really just kept staying positive and talking to Freddie. And a couple times I had to tell her, hey, or ask her. I said, hey, do you mind if I put music on? I need music right now. You know? So shout out to DMX. Rest in peace. Because DMX and Pearl Jam got me through that. Yeah, it was after that where I really started to, my feet started to swell. They started to hurt. Everything was numb and stiff. But I kept thinking about my family, my release family, all the people that donated, the people that love me just in general. Like, I got a lot of love. Sometimes I forget, but there's a lot of people out there that give me love. And again, you know, the people that we've lost, and I just didn't want to let everyone down. And I know they would have still been okay if I didn't finish, but I just, it was like a personal thing. Like, I didn't want to give up, and it got hard at times. I mean, that's a lot, man. Like, there was one part where I'm like, all right, dude, like, is this over yet? Like, like, this is, it was dragging.
Fifth, you know? Avenue feels like forever.
Dude, I don't know. I kept saying, who designed this? I said, they're torturing us. I said, Freddie, we got to go all the way up, go around the Bronx, another bridge, and then go all the way down again?
Yeah.
I said, why? And now we're on cobblestones near the park? I said, Freddie told me. She said, we're going to be on cobblestones in Central Park. I said, no, we're not. So we started walking. Immediately, I couldn't. It hurt.
Yeah.
I said, we got to go across the other side on the pavement. On the. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So... I'm sorry. I know I get off topic.
No,
it's just
good.
A lot, man. Okay. So if I didn't know, so there's one other thing. Here's a side note. I also wanted to beat Joey. Joey, much he loves me, and I love
him. So our good friend Joe Zappone, he's the, what is it, director of ops, right?
Yes, director of operations.
At release. He's run 306 in London, and then again at the New York City Marathon, ran 306 again.
He's a beast.
Incredible.
Out of nowhere, he makes me proud. We had a little bet going, you know, and at one point I texted during the marathon, and mm-hmm. I said to Zach, I said, we can't let Joey win. And that was fun, but it was actually, it's just stuff like that.
What was the bet?
Joey bet I wouldn't finish, and Zach bet I would. And this is a while ago.
Yeah.
And whatever happened, we had to donate to the charity. And it was just a principle. I said, Zach, we can't let Joey win.
Yeah.
And I was pissed at the time because I was hurting. And the other thing was, you know, Zach texting me saying, just get to the park. I think he kept saying like 90th Street or something. 90.
Yeah.
He just kept saying, get to the park and we got you. We will do the rest with you. We got food for you. We got supplies. People were checking in before that. You want to drop off earlier, you know. But once I knew I was going to see the fam and they were going to do it with me, I knew I was straight. I just had to get to that mm-hmm. that point, you know. And there's a million different things of like why we, you know, I got there.
Yeah.
You know, but that's like, they carried me.
in a way, like when Freddie's family got to know you and helped her out, what was that like, I guess, when now you had to introduce like your friend to all the release people who were jumping in?
It was like you would bring in your people. It's like when you bring a girl home and then, you know, she meets your family and then you meet her family. It's just we did it all in, you know, in one day. Yeah, her sisters were beautiful people and amazing. And that helped me as well. And then, you know, I kept telling her, like, Freddie, we got you. Like, my peoples are going to meet us there. And they welcomed her and she was just, she could feel the love. It was palpable. And, you know, we took her in like family, and that's what we do at release, you know, and we hugged her and excited and got Joe and Zach and other people got to know her the last few miles, you know, and make fun of me a little bit, you know, and this is all stuff that you just can't plan. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we did it all together and now she's part of the family.
So again, I guess back to that finish line feeling. You, what was it like when you could see it? Because that's the thing. You turn into the park. You still got a little ways to go. It's a little uphill. But then once you finally could see the finish line, that must have been like a big relief.
Huge. That's when I really started losing it in terms of just like things went numb, you know, and it was exciting and it was all these emotions. When I could see it, I started walking faster, you know, and I started, it was like I was limping, but I was walking faster. So, you know, quick story is I almost went down. I got very excited by the production and all the lights leading up to it. And the uh-huh. You know, and I stepped into like this pothole. Like,
oh, man. No.
Yeah, and I rolled my ankle.
Right, like, by the finish. This is in mile 26, probably.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, this is like you could see it. And I almost went down. Because I get a little excited, you know, that's just kind of me. So my people saw me. They were like worried. I almost went down. And, you know, I saw it and just walking and I just kept feeling like it was like the Wizard of Oz. You know, it was all of us we just got there. And once I actually touched it and crossed the line, it was the greatest feeling in the world. It felt like I was sliding into home plate, you know, to win the game. Mm-hmm. And it was just excitement and hugs and crying and, you know, laughter and emotions. And then this lady says, I want to interview you. And I said, oh, man. I said, I'm down, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to make sense. You know, that my brain was all over the place. But they put this cape on you. Oh, yeah. So that was the most regal shit I ever seen, Chris. I felt like a king. This guy.
The medal.
Oh, they put the medal and the cape. And it wasn't one of those. I thought we were going to get those cheap cape, like those plastic.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still wearing, that's like my jacket for the winter. It thing's beautiful, man. It's like a Columbia. That's when I said, oh, wow, this is most, I said, I feel so regal. And it was like one of the greatest moments of my life.
Wow.
I can't really compare. It's hard to explain it. I don't really know what to compare it to because I've never done anything like that.
Hardest thing you've ever done in your life? I mean, I'm sure some of the struggles along the way with recovery, but there's a lot of, physically maybe this was, right?
Yeah. I'd say sober.
Yeah.
Hardest thing I've ever done sober.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to push, keep pushing. You know, I always hear this. You guys always hear this, right? Like you'd be surprised at what you're capable of and your body and the mind and your mind is, you know, it's in your mind, you know, it's a mental thing, you know, to keep pushing your body. I've heard that my whole life. Did I believe that? Yes, but not for me. Yeah, this was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. Because it was all mental. My body was numb, you know, like it was almost like cut off. Mentally, though, I could have quit at any moment. I could have grabbed an Uber, you know? People still would have, you know, I still would say, hey, at least I started.
Yeah.
But like, who don't want to finish, dude? You know? It's not about the time. Like, it's just about finishing. Mm-hmm. And I just knew you guys would be so proud of me. And that like, all that stuff was for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff that we all, the whole time, man. You know? And listen, this opened my eyes a lot. I want to take it more serious next, this coming year.
So you want to do another one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I'm hooked. No, I'm in.
I think Freddie, I think, said she hasn't decided if she wants to do it again next year, but in one of our text groups, our friend Kara Enright said, it was like, Mario and Freddie, like, that's the duo that have to do it together every year from now on.
I would love that, but I don't know if I got another 11 hours in me. You know, it's...
You want to go under.
Yeah, no, I want to go, like... I don't know what normal people do it. I want to finish when it's. I want to feel the crowds. I want to feel the Gatorade. You know, I want to feel like when it's still daylight. So I don't know what a good goal is. I was talking shit the other night with Joey on a story saying I'm going to do 5 hours. I just talk a lot of shit. I don't know what's realistic, but I know I have a year. I also know that can go by really fast.
Yeah.
And I just want to be healthier so that I don't come across these kind of knee problems. You know, I never had any physical issues because I wasn't, it gets harder when you get bigger like this, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, so I want to train and I want to do it slowly in the right way. But it's one of the greatest, coolest days I have ever seen.
So what's the plan with the medal? Right now you're wearing it, but where do you plan on keeping it? It's something that you could pull out and... The story behind it is so powerful.
I keep saying I feel like I got my G-Unit spinner. Shout out to Queens, right? Shout out to 50 Cent. I've never had a medal, honestly, and I didn't know it was this cool. Mm-hmm. Like, this is none of the stuff. I don't really do a lot of research. Like, I was just kind of like, none of that stuff was like, oh, wow, I came in to get my medal. I just wanted to finish. Mm-hmm. So all this was a bonus. I feel like a champion, man. I'm not going to lie, Chris. So I think, you know, we were just talking about it before, I think, right? But
got to frame the singlet jersey. and the bib and the medal. Get it engraved. Take it to my dad. My dad will engrave it for
really?
Me. Yeah.
Horn?
Yeah, horn and then 1055 on there.
Yo, it's crazy. I'm still in shock, to be honest with you. I don't even believe this is real still. It's all going to hit me. I mean, I was very emotional a couple days after still, but, you know... This stuff, man, like even today I pulled out the jersey to bring and the medal, you know, I don't know why, just because I'm excited.
Yeah.
But I still don't really believe it.
You did it.
We did it.
It was a team thing for sure. But like physically that day, I think you proved to a lot of people, you know, especially within our friends group, that anything is possible because... I had my doubts too. A lot of people did, you yourself included, that it was going to happen. And until I saw that you were in the Bronx, that's the moment where things changed for me. And I was like, he's actually going to finish this thing. And like, I was in shock. And like you said, it's taking me a while to process, but it's something that, you know, hopefully people listening to this can take some inspiration from that. Anything you really set your mind to, you can accomplish. Even when it's so, so tough physically, it's mind over matter, really.
You get me excited, Chris. I doubted myself. You know, there was people that had their doubts, you know, and rightfully so. Like, it wasn't like a competition, you know, it was like, damn, like, this dude... It might not happen. And so I will say the biggest thing from this whole experience that is like so touching, the amount of people that have messaged me, whether it be on social media or texted me or whatever, I can't explain the outpour. Yo, you're such an inspiration. I'm so proud of you. You just proved like big dudes like me can do it. The underdogs, like, people I haven't talked to in probably 20 years, some of them, I grew up with.
Yeah.
I don't even know how they got my number. You know, remember when we were this, like, oh my God, like people that I might have even thought hated me. You know what I mean? But like the number one thing I got out of it was that I inspired a lot of people, which is insane. But a lot of people, I guess, for the average Joe, that Mario Dierno just ran a marathon or walked, you know, whatever, completed a marathon, right? That they want to do it now. Mm-hmm. And that is something I never expected, you know? And I told a couple of my friends that were there, I said, I did it for us. I did it for the big guys. You know, I did it for us. And that is probably one of the coolest feelings of this whole thing.
Like you said, afterwards, people have donated. I think the one that stood out to me, Freddie, who was with you the entire time, the next day donates $262 to your fundraiser, which is just beautiful because for the 26.2-mile distance. I can't get through it without tearing up. So I'm gonna make you read it. For the listeners, I guess, can you read the message that she attached to the donation?
Man, this is tough. It says Freddie Lynn Bengua made a $262 donation. Mario, you started out as another stranger struggling along the course, but became friends through our journey to the finish line. People come into our lives for a reason. Yesterday was a perfect example. Thanks also to the release team for getting us through the park. I have never had so much fun the last 3 miles of a marathon. Felt like part of your family, and also made me forget how much my ankles and feet were hurting! Exclamation mark. I literally have chills.
So you inspired a lot of people, Horn, and myself included. I won't forget, it, for many reasons, everyone was going to say, the 50th anniversary of New York City Marathon is going to be the biggest party in the city. The city is back, and you're going to remember it for so many reasons, the crowds and all that. But it's great that a big part of it too was knowing that one of my friends was one of the last people across the finish line and defied odds.
My friend Zach Clark always says it, right? Keep going. And Joey always taught me, finish the job. And those are two things I think in life that you could take anywhere with you. I'm just a big believer in community. And without you guys, and there's so many to mention, but like you, Zach Price, Welshy, Greg Travers, Karen, Kara, and right, everyone's siblings, wives, mothers, like people just cheered me on for months. So there was a lot of times when I just did not believe in myself and wanted to quit. I wanted to run like away, not the marathon. I wanted to run away from y'all. Because I was scared. It's all fear. And that's what I got me. That's what got me through. So my suggestion to anybody, that whether it's stuff going on at home, whether it's addiction, whether it's personal goals, work, whatever, it's okay to ask for help. And I recommend it, because once you ask for help, then the secret's out. So, all right, but now what? Now what are we going to do with it? Mm-hmm. It's not always easy to listen to the help. But if you stay close to a community or whoever, like friends and a group of people, for me, that always carries me. Because if I was alone, I wouldn't have done this. Mm-hmm. Number one, I would have never signed up. Like, why? It just wasn't in my mix, in my cards. And number two, I definitely wouldn't have finished. And I can tell you that with 100% sureness. Mm-hmm. So it's because of you guys, the faces and the little sayings and all the times we spent together, that's what gets you through in that moment.
Mario, the Italian Horn, the marathoner, crazy. Thanks so much for doing this and sharing your story. And I hope so many people find more inspiration, and I guess we're going to have you back on next year when you do it all over again.
5 hours. No. Thank you so much for having me on, Chris. I love your podcast. It's funny, cause I was a fan of yours before we met. And, I kept asking Zach, like, yo, who's this dude? I was asking Joe, yo, who's this dude? Who's this dude, Chris? And when we met, it was just like golden, man. Like, I don't know, the running community, it's one of the coolest group of people I have ever met. And I would have never thought I would have said that like years ago. Like, I didn't even know it was a thing. Mm-hmm. So this whole thing has opened me up to a whole new world.
So it's a welcoming community, and it's happy to have you.
Chris, it's just like the recovery community. You guys have each other's back.
Yeah.
So I want to say I love you, all the running community, all of them. And thanks for having me. And I'll see you next year.
The City of Smack podcast is a production of the City of Smack podcast network. It is produced and edited by Mike Zerzolo. Did you enjoy this episode enough to dish out a couple bucks? Support City of Smack by pledging any dollar amount over on patreon.com/cityofsmack to join our loyal legion of backers who keep this show going strong. If you're on your phone right now, you can also open up the Venmo app and hit us with a one-time donation to @CityofSmag. We've also got merch over on CityofSmag.com. Any way you can show your support goes a long way. Thanks for listening. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running. Legs are feeling good. See you next time.